Did you know that there are at least 23 million American adults who can't read a one ad?
It's called reading. Top to bottom, left to right. Group words together as a sentence.
Money Life presents.
I'm chatting with my guest, author, lecturer.
You get him to open his mind and his future.
The book interview.
Give a kid a book and you'll give a kid a break.
That's gonna be radical, Chuck.
Reading is good. Can we start the story now?
Oh, we sure can, and the story we're talking about today is the story of the American Corporation, because my guest is Richard Langlois. He is a professor at the University of Connecticut. He is the author of The Corporation and the 20th Century, The History of American Business Enterprise. And this is not easy lifting, folks. This is a big book, literally and physically, but it's also a fascinating book, because if you're of my age and you grew up looking at things like all of the management changes and the things that people were doing at the end of the 20th century, well, it was really interesting, and it set up a lot for what we've got now. And there's a lot of culture changes that have happened that if you listen to the guys who come on this show and they're talking about, ooh, I look for this or that in the companies I am buying. Well, when I was reading through this book, I was finding things going, oh, wait, you know, you look at a company today, and if you understand the roots of it and what was going on, you understand a lot better what you're actually looking at. If you want to learn more, langlois.ucon.edu, and Langlois, L-A-N-G-L-O-I-S, langlois.ucon.edu is the website for Richard. And of course, you can find out more about the book there. Richard Langlois, welcome to Money Life.
Well, I'm delighted to be here, Chuck.
So like I said, to me, this book helped me kind of get a better understanding of the kinds of companies I might want to buy when, you know, when I'm hearing people say, I buy management, you know, I'm looking for great management. And at the same time, it really kind of suggests that the way we got to where we are right now was not necessarily always through a good place, because you talk a lot about a concept called managerialism. So explain that, and why that is or has not been good for the evolution of the American corporation.
Yes, well, managerialism is an old idea that goes way back to the beginning of the century. And in many ways, this book is kind of pushing back on the idea of managerialism. First and foremost, the book is an economic history, I hope a very readable economic history of the 20th century, focusing on economic organization, the corporation, and the alternatives to the corporation. As you know, during the middle part of the century, and you were just talking about this, we had these large vertically integrated corporations, and everybody believed that that's how the world should be organized and that these corporations would last forever. And of course, they didn't last forever. And the book is in some ways trying to explain that. And I'm making the argument that the reason that we had these managerial corporate, first of all, what do I mean by managerial? Managerial means simply corporations that are run by professional managers, not run by their owners. So the idea was in the 19th century, companies were mostly entrepreneurial, owned and managed by the same people. And for some of the 20th century, it was argued corporations were run by these professional managers who had access to special knowledge, to scientific techniques of management that were superior to what entrepreneurs could do. And that's why we saw these large vertically integrated companies like General Motors and DuPont and so on in the middle of the 20th century. And what I argue in the book is that what's really going on is that large firms are kind of repositories of institutions that are substitutes for the institutions that you might find in markets, like, for example, financial markets. So entrepreneurs are always trying to find the best institutional arrangement to get things done, and that depends a lot on what's available to them. And I make the point, this is one of the central theses of the book, is that the 20th century was a real mess. You had the Great Depression, you had World War II, and for a lot of the 20th century, market institutions, including financial markets, weren't working really well. And so part of the reason, I argue, an important part of the reason why we saw these large managerial companies is they were a better way to do things in a world where markets didn't work very well, where financial markets had been destroyed by the Depression, had been regulated by the New Deal. And so in that kind of a world, you can kind of hide inside of the corporate veil and do things your way, create your own institutions, in particular become an internal capital market that's alternative to the external capital markets. And I tell the story of the demise of the corporation in the late 20th century, and that's really in many ways a story about the rise of markets, and including financial markets, that gain comparative advantage over the internal capital markets that were in firms.
It was interesting, as I was reading through the book, I was sort of equating some of this with that idea that you get the entrepreneur who starts the business, and then you get to the managerial phase, you know, and we've seen it in great corporations throughout the centuries. Of late, I've been talking a lot about comparing AI and what's happening now to the 1980s, when everybody was trying to, right, to navigate the change from mainframe computers to home computers, et cetera. And of course, the guy who was going to revolutionize everything was Ann Wang, and he may have been the genius, but they couldn't take the entrepreneurial idea and then make it, right, and manage it correctly. So the guy who was at one, right, point the leader wound up being the loser, one of the losers, not many losers, in the end.
Right. Well, and at some point, you're always going to get managers, because when things get complicated, right, you've got to have, you can't run everything yourself, because you are a bottleneck if you try to run things yourself. But that's different from saying that all things have to be done inside the firm, right? The other alternative you have is you can buy things on the market, right? So instead of making all of your own parts for the car you're making, the way Henry Ford did, is you can buy those parts from suppliers, right? So it's not that there are never managers, but the question is, how big is the firm, right? What are the boundaries of the firm? What kinds of things do we do inside the firm, and what kinds of things do we do through the market?
In terms of where we are now, you talked about the demise of the corporation. Is that actually what we are seeing, or are we seeing corporations change? And is this part of why we have a lot fewer stocks available these days, and people are much more interested in equity, in private equity, because, right, it's a different way to run and, of course, manage a corporation?
I think that is a trend that we've seen for the last decade or so, that new companies are staying private a lot longer, right? In the dot-com bubble, Netscape and everyone wanted to go public right away. Now companies don't want to go public, and the reason is partly because of the regulations that came in with the dot-com bust and the financial crisis makes it harder to go public. But also, I think it speaks to the fact that there's a lot more owner control today than there was in, say, 1952. Where there are really private equity and other kinds of owners who are actually exerting control, so that there's not a complete separation of ownership from control. And that's one of the ways in which today's companies are different from the ones in the middle of the century. And I think the other significant way, well, there's a number of significant ways, but the other significant way is that they are much more focused, right? They're not trying to make everything. There'll be a platform, and they'll contract with a lot of other people to do things, right? Apple doesn't make its own cell phones, right? It contracts with companies around the world to make their phones. And so that's a lot different from what you saw, for example, in manufacturing in the middle of the century.
What does that do for somebody who is an investor? Like I said, I'm always talking with folks who sit there and say, look, I'm looking for great companies. And when you ask them to define great companies, they're going to say, well, it's a company that, you know, has fabulous management and all the rest. Do we look and evaluate management today the way we did years ago and in the past, do we have to discount it?
Well, I think management is still important. A couple of friends of mine just written a book saying managers are still important, but managers can't foresee the future, and they can't foresee what's going to happen when things change radically. And even the best managers that you talked about, Wang and you know the mini computer makers around Route 128, they were very good at managing MIDI computers, but they could not adapt to the personal computer, and IBM could not adapt to the, really, even though it was, had built a personal computer, it could not adapt to the personal computer. So no matter how good your management is good at managing what exists. It's not very good at foreseeing and reacting to the future, because nobody is, because it's impossible to do that. So yes, I think you want to tell your people to look for good management, but I think you also want to tell them to be alert to the fact that a whole new things may be happening. I mean, one of the themes in the book, especially when I talk about the demise of the corporation, is that the corporation in the 1960s, for example, was kind of an internal capital market. That was the days of the conglomerate. And so you would buy a firm, you know, buy stock in ITT. What you were buying was actually stock in Sheraton Hotels and Continental Baking Company, which made Hostess Twinkies, right? Because they owned all kinds of things. And so they were like a layer between your investors and the things they were actually investing in. And of course, that went away. And so now you're investing much more focused kinds of activities, not in large corporations, which are themselves kind of investment vehicles, right? That's less, you know, I mean, there are things like Berkshire Hathaway, but that's really the exception that proves the rule.
Almost out of time here. I thought it was management's job to be able to understand what's happening. If you can't sort of rely on management or count on management, that doesn't mean you don't invest. That just means you're giving them a shorter leash. In other words, if you see the trends moving away yes. from the company that you're looking at, it is maybe a sign that time to go?
Yes, and you may have really good managers, but if you're making manual typewriters or film cameras, you know, it's not going to be successful no matter how good the managers are.
Richard, that was really interesting. I wish I had just a little bit more time to talk about it. We don't. I've got more questions, not more time. And if my audience wants to get those questions answered, they're going to have to buy the book. But thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Well, thank you. I really enjoyed it.
That's Richard Langwa. He is the author of The Corporation and the 20th Century, The History of American Business Enterprise. It's out now from Princeton University Press. You can learn more about him. He's a professor at the University of Connecticut, and the book by going to langlois.ucon.edu. We've got more to go on today's show, much more. So settle back and relax, because we're living the money life. And like the corporation, we'll still be here when you come back in just a moment.